You're listening to Coffee with Innovate Finance, where we speak with experts from the industry on the changing face of financial services and the future of fintech and financial innovation. I am Rashi Pandey, Associate Director of Membership and Growth, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Samantha Emery, who is Director of Payments, Industry, and Development at Lloyds Banking Group. So thank you so much for joining us today, Samantha.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
So I was, you know, looking through your profile, and I have to say it's very impressive. And you worked in financial services from the start of your career. So can you share a little bit more about this and how your journey so far has connected you with fintech? And, you know, as a director of payments, industry, and development at Lloyds, what does your everyday look like?
Okay, big question to get us going. So starting with the first bit, I think the early to mid part of my career was in the global transaction services division of a major bank, leading technical delivery and change management of what were for the time best in class online banking capabilities to customers, as well as working on the product side of the conversation. So if you almost take a non-purist broad definition of fintech before we were even talking about it, technology enabling financial services innovation, this was it. And years later, I stepped out of industry into the regulatory space for a few years, and I worked at the Financial Conduct Authority, where I had the privilege of directly overseeing and engaging with fintech firms at different points in their life cycle. So leading their innovation unit, I oversaw enablement services such as the regulatory sandbox, which obviously saw a lot of take up from startups as well as more established players. But then also spending time in payment supervision, looking at the emerging wave of things like e-money institutions building out and scaling, as well as connecting with established acquirers and remitters. So really interesting stuff. And then when I go to the current role and how that connects into the fintech space, the current role sees me leading the charge for Lloyds Banking Group on payment strategy internally and payments industry evolution externally. And so much of this ends up being around the most effective way of serving up payments technology as an enabler to deliver better for the UK's customers and businesses, both domestically and obviously sort of any interactions that they have overseas internationally. And it's critical to our group purpose of helping Britain prosper. And partnerships are a key part of this. I lead some of the bank's fintech relationships from a payments perspective, as well as sitting on the group's fintech investment board. So citing and deciding on opportunities to learn, partner with fintechs, which we'll probably touch on later. But my role at the moment also delivers key services for the group. I lead the digital payment scheme, so things like faster payments, CHAPS. I run the group's payment settlement and liquidity for the UK and Europe, deliver strategic design services, and ensure the group stays compliant with payments policy. And it's a really broad role, which makes it incredibly exciting. But what that means, Rashi, is there is almost no such thing as an average day. I think one of the reflections that I often have is what it requires is a real need to balance the internal with the external in a way that takes both forward, which is something I particularly enjoy.
That's amazing to hear, by the way. And it sounds very, very exciting. And I did see, you know, your stint at the FCA as well. So, you know, you spoke about payments. So, of course, you know, just circling back to it and the fact that you are leading payments at Lloyds Banking Group, can you share how the digital payments market is evolving right now? And how is it impacting banks in particular?
Sure. I mean, again, looking back at my career, we have been on an amazing journey in payments, even in recent times. Faster payments has obviously been around for 15 years or so, but it's really not that long ago that the only way to do payments or interact with a bank was directly with the bank via the channel that the bank provided, some of those that I would have been building and creating, or via checks, via branch visits, or eventually via the apps. And where we sit today is consumers have much greater choice, and the evolution of payments is happening at a far greater speed. But I think there is a distinction between the front-end evolution and the underlying rails, where change can be slower and more complicated. And to the uninitiated, I personally am a fan, it can feel far less glamorous. Consumers don't necessarily care about the new payments architecture or ISO 20022. They want speed, they want convenience, they want a baseline expectation of safety to be delivered to them when they make payments. And I think what also sits underneath this is the differing expectations that customers have for different types of payments. Micro payments versus buying a house. Might you really care about tracking or settlement or FX for a micro payment versus when you're buying a house? So I think taking a step back to the question, a lot of the evolution that we've seen is that at the product and proposition end, but actually ecosystem players, all ecosystem players have a really critical role in the evolution of the underlying rails, which is where a good chunk of my focus lies. And actually an enormous amount of industry activity has been happening for a number of years. And since last year as a group, we've been considering what enablers underpin a successful financial services industry from a payments perspective. And this includes questions which the Future of Payments Review that came out of this year's Mansion House speech have posed to industry. And we're really excited to talk about how the UK stays best in class, what opportunities we have to bring greater regulatory alignment and coordination, greater modularity of design in the foundations of our financial market infrastructures, and consideration of the life cycle of these components, which should all get us to a place where we're delivering greater efficiency and effectiveness when we're looking at any industry initiative. And I think it would be easy to think this is a big bank conversation. I do encourage your audience to step back from that because it actually impacts the whole ecosystem. When you're engaging in a justifiably regulated environment, it comes with responsibilities. We do what we're required to do to ensure we have a stable and sustainable foundation for what we want to do to deliver that value add to customers. And it's often been built up around managing risks. And I was talking to, I shan't name her, but a very impressive woman in industry recently on this very topic. And she recently sort of described this growing industry conversation as a Maslow's hierarchy of needs of sorts. So things like resilience, consumer protections being at the base, and pure innovation at the apex. And for me, this ends up forming a really simple equation for companies of any size, that in order to increase the capacity to serve up that R&D type innovation, we need to get better at doing the things that support sustainable innovation underneath that, both individually as companies and collectively as an industry, which in itself requires innovative thinking.
That's very, very interesting. And, tying this back to your work with fintechs as well, what are the big trends and challenges are you seeing in the fintech space?
So there are a couple of themes that I'd like to zoom in on that are centered around good customer outcomes. And the first one I'd like to talk to is closing the digital divide. And I think some of the data that we have as a group shows that around 10 million UK adults can't access the internet by themselves. 11 million people lack the essential digital skills needed for everyday life. And new technologies have made life easier for many, but for those who didn't grow up in the digital age, it can be tricky to navigate. And that maps into financial services and not being able to connect for the less technically savvy or those with disabilities. It can cause unwanted stress. And I think the more digitally dependent society becomes as a whole, the more crucial these skills would be. And as a group, we offer a digital helpline that provides one-to-one training to help people build their confidence, not only around using the internet for banking, but just more broadly around everyday tasks. So it is a really important topic to us, but I think it's not without its contentions. I think in the payment space in particular, we know that the majority of our carbon footprint is associated with physical payments. And it's the same group of people who are more likely to rely on those physical payments. So again, it's really important that both fintechs and larger financial institutions come together as an industry to really get creative on how we solve for what needs to be a just transition to net zero for all of the UK's customers. And I think the second piece that I wanted to look to was around consumer protections. We know the stats from a UK perspective on a fraud basis. We have around 68% of purchase scams starting on digital or social media platforms such as Facebook or Instagram. So it's really important for us going forward that social media platforms actually look to stop scams at the source and contribute to refunds. And this is something that we'd like to see built into a future iteration of a national fraud strategy. And it's incredibly important as innovation throughout financial services, but in particular in the payment space evolves, that consumer protections are at the heart of all emerging payment methods. And the reason why I tie this into a conversation on fintech is we are heavily engaged in the work of the Joint Regulatory Oversight Committee at the moment to progress the future of open banking. And that is a broad church of industry players, including a number of the TPPs in the fintech space, looking at future of open banking and variable recurring payments. But one of the things that we are pretty clear on as an organization is that scaling these new means of payments cannot come at the detriment of consumers and businesses. So the journey as to how we progress that and how we adopt it needs to be carefully considered.
And how do you think banks can, or do you think banks can match fintech challengers within the payment space?
I mean, it's the age-old question. So let me try and find a slightly different way of
It
answering
is,
it.
yeah.
I think firstly, new tech will play a key role in Lloyds's ambition of helping Britain prosper. And I think there is now broad consensus across the whole of industry that we're in the era of co-optation. And organisationally, we're very much open to fresh ways to tackle problems within financial services, whether they emerge in-house or not. And fintechs and banks have always operated in the same sort of context, but we have different dynamic tensions owing to when and how we came into being. But what actually binds us all is that we all need and thrive in an ecosystem that has a range of players in it, as do the ecosystem's customers. Payments has specific characteristics that impact this. It is and has always been a network business. It simply doesn't work as well when there's fragmentation. You need the pipes or the rails to connect. You need widely adopted standards and the investment to sustain them being viably split across a broad spectrum of participants. You struggle with customer and business adoption in a fragmented space. You need broad reach. You need both sides of the market to come together with incentives and risk balanced appropriately. So the usual soundbites apply, Rashi, that if banks don't match fintech's products or propositions, they will likely see more limited adoption. But
Of
equally, on the fintech side of the conversation, where the economics around things like open banking are shifting to a world where they'll pay to play on the rails, the same as any other participants, means there are business decisions to be made on how to manage those costs whilst incentivizing take up. And finding a market is and has always been the nature of business. But I genuinely think in the business of payments, there's just something about it that means you can never truly go it alone. You're always hooked into that network in some way.
And talking about network as well and the ecosystem, and I know for a fact that you do work with some of our members, but I want to hear it from you. How is Lloyds Banking Group partnering with fintechs? And if you can publicly share about some successful partnerships as well with our audience, that would be fabulous.
Absolutely. So obviously I've said collaboration between banks and fintechs is essential to making sure that we can deliver best in class and meet customers' demands. But part of what is really important to enable that to happen is making sure those collaboration processes are as safe and efficient as possible. So one of the sort of big success items from last year was the launch of our innovation sandbox, which has really made that much more seamless. It's a digital environment that lets us run proof of concepts with fintechs using synthetic data, to get a sense of kind of what the market is for their products and services. And it offers a much smoother way to partner with fintechs. It has made the collaboration process faster, which again, in the day by day, week by week, quarter by quarter of a startup is increasingly important. The sandbox itself has an integrated marketplace of more than 100 fintechs, over 500 APIs, and more than 100 data sets. So it really has been a game changer for us, and it brings different areas of Lloyds together with fintechs in a secure way to facilitate data-driven decision making. So hugely, hugely valuable. The experiments to date have really been focused on developing new sustainable solutions for our commercial customers and new retail customer propositions. But we're really excited to start exploring how our sandbox can be leveraged to explore new and emerging technologies such as distributed ledger technology. And so we're clear that this has to be sustainable innovation. And when I reflect and look back on how I've approached this through my career, I think it's really ensuring that you're both clear on the problem that you're trying to solve and also how it serves your purpose. And I think everyone is very familiar with the solution looking for a problem, but that purpose-led piece is pretty key. We might invest to build a future capability for the group. We might do proof of concepts to ensure that we understand how something works in practice, but it will be also tied into the implication for the group and its customers and its mission to help Britain prosper. So we wanted to share an example of a partner, and it's really exciting that Lloyds is both an investor and a future participant in Finality. And Finality will be the first distributed ledger technology-based, fully regulated payment system in the world. It's backed by central bank money, leveraging the Omnibus Account Facility at the Bank of England. The blockchain essentially acts as a mirror to this account for participants and allows payments to be made between participants outside of today's RTGS hours as well as within. It aims to address some of those age-old problems in the financial markets industry, such as trade processes being fragmented, liquidity constraints, complex and costly risk management. And we're really excited about being the first UK bank to go live on their system later this year.
That's amazing. And I know, like you said, you worked in with fintechs in the open banking space, you're looking at digital assets. It's quite exciting. And I also know that at Lloyds, you believe that finance should be a force for good, and you have mentioned helping Britain prosper. How is the bank supporting this vision and how it collaborates with fintechs?
Absolutely. So I think how we're supporting it and just allows us to talk a little bit about what it means, what helping Britain prosper means. And it's about creating a more sustainable and inclusive future for people and for businesses and shaping finance as a force for good. And fintech collaboration is vital if we're to create the best possible outcomes for our customers, help them get the most out of emerging technologies. We're a member of the Fintech Delivery Panel, and we've signed up to the Fintech Delivery Pledge, which implements globally leading standards for the creation of partnerships between the UK's largest financial institutions and fintech firms. And we've already spoken about the sandbox and what that's unlocked for us. But another way that we collaborate with fintechs is through our launch innovation. And this specific initiative is aligned to specific business challenges and designed to fast track experimentation for companies who are interested in running a proof of concept with Lloyds Bank. And we've had some fantastic successes here, the most recent being Cowra, who went on to receive a £4 million investment from our very own fintech investment team. And Cara brings all of the driving related payments together into one place to simplify car administration for UK drivers. So supporting customers in managing their financial lives in a better way, which is really important. So we totally understand that the fintech industry is transforming the way that financial institutions run and serve their customers. And we're committed to facilitating this in a way that benefits our customers. And closer to home, I mentioned payment sustainability earlier. We've done analysis around our group carbon footprint thematically through that lens of payments, which we're in the process of getting externally reviewed. And this was really, really important for us to progress because it sharpens our decision making internally on how we need to consider payments on our journey to net zero and meeting our commitments. And given payments is a network business, it also underlines what industry need to come together on to solve, such as physical payments. Now, I won't say any more, as one of my colleagues will be speaking at your FinTech as a Force for Good event in October, but just a little teaser.
That's amazing. And Samantha, shifting gears towards diversity in financial services, as it's quite an important topic, not only for us, but for yourselves as well. What do you think are some of the challenges women face in fintechs and financial services?
So the challenges remain numerous for women and other underrepresented groups, I should say, and they're sadly much the same as they have been for quite some time. I tend to sort of unpack this through the different lenses I get to see the problem through. So companies such as Lloyds, boards, but also from a fintech perspective. And if I look at the established companies, numbers are obviously improving, but they are stubborn at the very top. They are stubborn in certain groups, in particular some intersectional groups, and in Black talent. And there's a real need to complement what I think has been a massive amount of support interventions that have been created over the last decade and a half with some fundamental end-to-end redesign of people processes in organizations, things like attraction and recruitment, talent management, and so on, that get us to the right answer on who gets ahead here and why. And this is what doing the work looks like. It is no mean feat, but that is the way forward. And when I look at it from a board's perspective, so both industry boards, fiduciary boards, from my experiences, I have seen that there can be a stickiness and a persistence in the archetypes of who gets a seat at the table, and on occasion, a reluctance to give them up. But I really encourage those, and it will be the chairs, obviously, who run the boards and these groups, to get more expansive in their thinking. What diversity of skills and person is required to best serve the organization, how things like tenure should be managed, and so on. And managing the dynamics of a more diverse board will also ask more of the chairs, both to create and maintain an inclusive environment. And outside of Lloyds Banking Group and my core role there, I sit on the board of Swift, which is arguably the world's first fintech. And I sit there as a director and as deputy chair. And these sorts of questions are front of mind to ensure that we're setting ourselves up for continued success. So it's not just saying, it is doing as well from my perspective. And then when I look at it from the fintech perspective, I've obviously had different opportunities to interact. Sometimes I've had a helicopter view on the sector. Sometimes I've been doing direct interactions myself. But I think the promised new world has not materialized. And I saw this through empirical review. I see this through the people that I connect with. And I think that in the early days, there was a certain underestimation of how good the status quo is at maintaining itself. And when you look across the broad spectrum of funders who back or execs who hire, we know the likely narrow pool, and yet we expected so much of it. And this is an absolute thing. There are exceptions. There are things that are doing really good work right now and driving change. But I do think there's an element of not recognizing that fintech sits at the intersection of two industries, financial services and technology, that have not solved the thing after decades would be naive. And so I genuinely encourage smaller companies to have a critical eye on who they choose to emulate and why. And it's important to ensure that the pace and the pressure of the environment in the early days doesn't override a need to be steadily building a diverse workforce. It's a sustainable thing to do, given it supports better risk mitigation, better decision making, and ultimately, survival is priority number one for any founder. One of the things I will say, given we're here, is we are very incredibly proud to have sponsored last year's Innovate Finance Women in FinTech Power List, which obviously celebrates the achievement of women across the FinTech ecosystem involved in the evolution of financial services. And that is where we can start surfacing some of the talent who can make this change.
It's been so wonderful speaking with you today, Samantha. But before I let you go, what advice would you give to women looking to make an impact in the space?
So that's probably the toughest question to finish on, but I will give you a straight answer. I think it's all about authenticity and taking up space. And I split this into kind of a few elements. The first, and you know, QVI roles, but being yourself. And I say this because all of the cliches aside, companies and boards benefit so much from diversity of thought and person, and often just don't have what they need. And trying to fit in often has you dialing up what isn't helpful and dialing down what can add value. And I spent time myself doing this and stopped and walked away, and things have felt very different since then. So I speak from personal experience on this one. It's not just a nice cliche. It does actually mean something of value to all of these organizations at the different levels. The second thing is almost, again, a bit of an eye roll moment for me, at least anyway, but the hustle culture extolled by many in and around the fintech community is really quite challenging to digest for underrepresented groups. That if you just applied yourself enough, you could magic away the daily friction that is experienced just through the virtue of you being you. I've seen it in, you know, pretty little pictures and GIFs. I've even seen people drawing it in equations. And I just say no. I am all for focus, drive and grit. But one should always balance the goal with an honest conversation about at what cost. And for the underrepresented groups, this goes way beyond the hours in a day I would work, the holidays I'm willing to forego, the time I won't spend with my family, into some deeply challenging and personal areas. And it's really key to self-care and well-being in the long term. So my main advice is just being ruthless in finding the right spaces where you can thrive. And my third and final sort of point really doubles down on the above. I don't buy into imposter syndrome in the way that I did a decade ago. I think there's often two things at play. One is a very normal and healthy kind of nervous system response that supports us through moments of change and growth. And the other is the lack of an inclusive environment that doesn't allow you to feel like you can bring your whole self into a space, into a conversation. And that isn't all actively done. Let's be clear, it can be passive. It can just be spaces not realizing how the dynamics will feel for those new voices stepping in and supporting that accordingly. But badging it all up as a syndrome has always, you know, it's just become a little bit akin to victim blaming for me. And I don't think it helps women or other underrepresented communities. And to kind of back that up with the receipts, it's exactly why the amount of Boost Your Confidence workshops aimed at women primarily have not touched the sides in all of the years that they've been running.
That is very, very thought-provoking, I have to say. Samantha, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Very much enjoyed it. It's been great fun.
Likewise, and more power to you and your team at Lloyds. And I'm looking forward to meeting you in person very soon.
And definitely.
Thank you so much. And to all our listeners, thank you once again for tuning into Coffee with Innovate Finance. Do look out for upcoming episodes and follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more on our programs and events. As always, until next time, take very good care of yourselves.